and good morning from Zurich. We are live. You're listening to Monocle on Sunday with me, Tyler Brulé. Coming up on today's program, of course, Emma Nelson is here. Also, Emily Isahow and our very own Chandra Kurter here. But I'll start with you, Emily. Good morning. What have you seen on the pages in the news headlines for us?
Good morning, Tyler. Let's talk about artificial intelligence or AI today.
Well, let's not.
There's been an open letter signed by 200 plus famous artists calling for some protection when it comes to creativity in the music business. And I just heard from Chandra today that he used AI also in vineyards.
Okay, well, we'll try to pull all of that apart. Also, our very own editor-in-chief, Andrew Tuck, is joining us from London. And then there's, of course, an ongoing Finnish theme. We'll also be heading to Helsinki to hear from our man there.
Norwegian party buses cause a stir. A new gender identity law threatens to topple the Swedish government. And the city of Helsinki is missing 18,000 computers that should be at schools. I'm Monocle's Helsinki correspondent, Petri Burtsov, and I'll be bringing you the latest news from the Nordic region.
Plus, we'll also speak to the designer Alfredo Heberle on his two-volume book, Verbal Doodling, 30 Years, Questions, Answers. It's the 7th of April, 2024, live from Zurich. This is Monocle on Sunday.
Live from Zurich, this is Monocle on Sunday with Tyler Brulé.
And good morning from Zurich. Emma, as you were saying a little bit earlier, it's a very special program because this is the first. It's a weekend. It's turning into a full jamboree. It's a gathering of Monocle patrons who are our most dedicated, some of the most longest standing subscribers who are here with us for the next 2 days.
It's absolutely delightful to put a face to all the names that I've been hearing about. And sometimes when you're on radio, it's quite a lonely business. You stand in a studio and you're talking to who you hope is just, you know, a good listener. And it's lovely to know that the next time I'll be on the radio, I will know what you look like. So thank you very much for coming.
It's and indeed, of course, many, many faces that you connected to names also when we were in Munich, when we kicked all of this off at the back end of summer in September. Very happy to say Chandra Kurt made it. You were in Venice and it could have been a very early flight this morning, but you arrived yesterday evening. Good morning. Very nice to see you.
Yeah, thank you for being here. And sorry for the disturbance and the turbulence of yesterday.
Okay, but was there any turbulence coming in from
Venice?
When
we went there, it was very funny. They gave us paper cups and they said, well, usually when you fly to Italy, there's so much heat and cold that some glasses broke. So they gave us now paper cups. So, but yesterday was quiet.
Okay. Do we need to discuss paper? This is not wine in paper cups, or was it?
Well, they gave champagne. I didn't. I had coffee, but the nice couple behind us, and in the morning they took champagne, but they got it in paper cups. But they were so happy, so it didn't matter.
Also, Emily, very nice to see you as well. And of course, amazing. Maybe just sort of tell people a little bit about the transformation. Emma, you touched on it, of course, but it's been miraculous. We've had a winter, as we often do in Zurich, where we talk about it on this program, where there's always just this lid over the lake, and then suddenly it just lifts when the weather changes, and it goes into high gear summer within the span of about 12 hours.
It's amazing. I was on Friday having dinner in the city, and you felt like the city had come back to life again. Everyone was out on the streets. It's like we come out of hibernation in the city, and then later in the day, I was up on the rooftop, kind of setting everything ready for the summer, and you could look at other rooftops. Everyone was there barbecuing, kind of taking care of their plants. So it's a lovely feeling, and it kind of takes me by surprise every time this happens in early spring, but it always does, and you just feel life in the city in a way that you don't necessarily when it's a bit colder.
Now, we'll be talking to your fellow countryman, Petri, a little bit later, but is this also the time of year when you look at, of course, the Finnish Meteorological Services website and sort of say, oh, those are the poor Finns. It's still 9 degrees in April up in Helsinki.
Absolutely. I think my family hates me. So on our group chat on Signal and WhatsApp, they keep on sending kind of funny images and videos how there was another snow blizzard. And I then sent a picture from the Lake of Zurich, how it's sunny, flowers are blooming. I'm surprised that they still keep me in the group chat, to be honest.
Our editor-in-chief, Andrew Tuck, is standing by in London. He might be in studio. He might be at the airport as well, because, Andrew, of course, you heard about Emma sort of trying to get her. You have to make your way to Zurich as well, because we have a big dinner tomorrow evening with our patrons. Where do we find you? And good morning.
Well, good morning, Tyler. It's so windy here that anybody who dared put out their kind of summer furniture at the moment would see it kind of flying across the neighbourhood, probably taking out one or two locals as it went. So it's sunny, but it's breezy.
And you, of course, in your column yesterday, you were talking about sort of the delights of flowers, Columbia Road, all of these things. Any terracotta pots blowing past you? Everything secured on the rooftop?
No, on the rooftop. I've literally just about 2 minutes ago looked outside the window and I see our neighbour's very large olive tree is like akimbo in front of our door, like some drunk tree. So it's going to have to go and be rescued in a minute. But it's been really stormy overnight. But yeah, it's going to be okay though. I'm looking forward to seeing you tomorrow.
Yeah, and we have many smiling patrons here waiting to see you as well. A very full lineup here in Zurich at the same time. But maybe just if we want to look at the front pages, we'll start there, of course. Emily's got a few stories for us as well. But if we were looking at the UK press this morning, Andrew, what's on the headlines?
Well, maybe if we can start just a little bit seriously. It's interesting that all of the newspapers are kind of coming to that long-running Ukraine story, but from very different angles. There's the Telegraph, a very pro-military, pro-armed forces newspaper, has lots of stories today saying that if the UK did go to war, it would be so ill-prepared that it's beginning to scare some kind of defence chiefs, and certainly some former defence chiefs are speaking out today saying that there's been no rehearsal about how you would run government from a war room, from a bunker. And then there's just lots of tiny stories popping up this morning which I think will give people cause for concern. In Slovakia, there's been an election which has seen the election of a new president who's skeptical on the Ukraine war, to put it mildly. So lots of swirling stories, I think, all coming back to the same thing. But also a kind of story that I haven't seen really in the UK press for maybe like 20-30 years. A worrying, just a kind of one of those unnerving stories. I don't know why they run it in the Daily Mail about what would happen if there was a nuclear Armageddon in the UK. And there's no way that people can get through their breakfast after that and think about anything positive. But I think it all stems from a slight realization that what's happening in Ukraine at the moment, what's unfolding, isn't very positive for the Ukrainians. And I think people are beginning to kind of wonder what happens if Trump comes in November. What's the scenario that we look at in just a few months' time?
But Andrew, that story in the Daily Mail, it's just one of those classic great, it's not great that it's a story about nuclear Armageddon, but it almost looks at and dissects sort of the postal code. So if there was a strike on London, where would you be okay and where would you be sort of obliterated? But it's also one of those infographic stories as well, which sell Sunday papers.
Yeah, I think that it's not the most important week in British politics or in the British business cycle this week. So there are lots of weird fillers in the newspapers. And also there's a strange thing that's been happening for a long time in the UK. But when you look now at the red tops and at some of the more supposedly serious broadsheet papers, whether you're reading them digitally or not, there's a kind of merging of storylines. So many of the things which make the top of the Telegraph, for example, or the Times even, are actually kind of gossip stories. And it's strange how the world of celebrity is so dominant in the UK that it's hard to run a serious newspaper without finding, I think, a quantity that would never have been required before of these softer stories to go on the front page. So whether it's people harumphing about Prince Charles trying to build a new model village in Kent and how everyone's up in arms. Every story, by the way, you read in any British newspaper, everybody is always supposedly up in arms about everything. And of course, you step out your front door and people are just getting on with their lives. So they've edged away from being reflections of, I think, of the collective conscience often, and become more kind of a reflection of what's happening on Saturday night TV, for example.
I want to just pick up, Emily, what's caught your eye? I know you touched on it at the top, AI, but do you want to start somewhere else this morning?
No, let's start with AI, if that's fine. No, it's an interesting piece, and I think it speaks to the broader question of how much AI should be used, particularly in creative fields. But there was this open letter signed by 200 high-profile musicians, everyone from Billie Eilish to Pearl Jam, Elvis Costello, Stevie Wonder, and even the estates of Frank Sinatra and Bob Marley calling for some legislation to kind of to have protections against the, what they call an envious predatory use of AI that essentially mimics artists' likeness, sound, and voice. Think of someone's catalog being input to AI and then a song coming out of a robot that sounds exactly like Billie Eilish or Stevie Wonder, and us as consumers wouldn't really know the difference. And of course, from an artist's perspective, as their creative workers, this is quite problematic. They don't call for an outright ban on AI. There are a lot of positive examples. I think we all were surprised last year when a new Beatles song came out, and it was thanks to AI that they were able to isolate John Lennon's voice from an earlier demo and release a new song. So there are a lot of good things, but what I always come back to is actually an old Finnish saying about fire, which means there's no proper translation, but it's something along the lines that fire is a good farmhand, but not a good master. And I think that pertains to AI as well. You can definitely use it creatively, but it shouldn't run you. And say, for instance, this week I've been writing an article and I've been using AI as a critical friend, asking me questions to kind of help me with the writing process. But again, it shouldn't take over. So that's an interesting news story I picked this week.
Andrew, just on that, we had a session in London. We had a Midori Mingler, and there was a bit of a reminder moment as well when we talk about this. Emma, you were there as well, and it's interesting. We have these themes that come up, and we sort of, you know, if we said, like, rewind 36, 48 months ago, and everyone was talking about NFTs, and they would transform everything. And I mean, who even talks about NFTs at all anymore? And then, of course, during the pandemic, we had Clubhouse, and that was just going to completely revolutionize audio sort of social media. I don't know if even accounts exist anymore. We were supposed to be all living in the metaverse right now. All of our patrons should have been joining us in the metaverse. I'm not sure who's there anymore. Andrew, is this just another one of those moments? I mean, yes, we know, yeah, AI is maybe different in terms of what its sort of technological currency is, but what's our take? Are we sort of overblowing it right now?
I think that the debate has ended up worrying about just the same few things as, will journalists lose their jobs? Will creativity be taken over by AI? And I think in some cases there are some real challenges there. And AI is a bit like the internet. It's one of those things that's going to get embedded into our lives and we stop thinking about it. And it isn't the top of every conversation. We remember like 30 odd years ago when every company began to strap a .com onto their old company fusty names to try and look modern. I don't think people have to panic about AI. It's one of those things that's going to get embedded into all sorts of processes. But I think it's right that people think about it. I have lots of friends in the creative world, in the acting world, for example. And there you see a real move to kind of sample people's voices so that when they make a film and they want to do an extension of it, a new series, they don't have to call the actor back. They've got their voice already used by AI. And that is happening in some shows already where friends of ours were approached by someone who said, we've made a movie and we put one of your actors in it. And they were like, how did you do that? And they said, we've done it all through AI. And so those challenges, I think it was right for the actors' unions to get involved and then people to think about what are the limitations on it. But I think a lot of the stuff will be reasonably positive. It will be high-speed research for things like medical care. And there, I think it's okay. I think it's just when we come down to this clunky bit, it's about, will all our newspapers be generated by AI? No, of course they won't, because the skill and dexterity of an individual reporter will still win through. Will all our painting be done by AI? No, but people have always used trickery and photo montage and the latest technology available for them to test the limits of art. And I don't mind that either, as long as you know what you're being served up.
Okay, so on the topic of served up, you set us up, Emily, the topic of wine and wine selection. We have to bring Chandra in here. This is obviously something which is impacting your sector. Yes, of course, we've sort of heard everything from bottle recognition, of course, what's inside the glass, etc. Interesting, threatening, or a load of nonsense.
No, I think it's a lot of usage also, because you can use it in the vineyards, you know, like the robotics. All robotics is now developing, like robots called Pete Piper or Bacchus, and they go between the wines and collect, for example, leaves, or they cut the wines if they have diseases, or because there are some wine regions like in Spain or Australia where it gets really hot and you cannot send the people out because on 40 degrees, how do they work, or they collapse. So you send now robots that do the work, or there is another one that can, it's very new now on the market, it makes like noises that the pests don't mate. So it's for the biodynamic wine making, so you don't need to put other things in the vineyards. You put this robot with these noises. And so there's a lot going on, and of course also in the keller, or you can check if there's enough water in the vineyards, and you give water. And like you said, mentioned Tyler, on the bottle you have these QR codes that is especially important for fine wines, where you spend a lot of money for a bottle, you know, thousands, and you can see how she traveled, if she was in warm or cold temperature, if she really moved, or she stayed in the winery, which the value is higher when it comes directly from the winery. So there's a lot going on, and I think it's very interesting. The whole discussion about the taste and the robot, that it will copy the base parameter of a wine, but as wine lovers know, a really great wine has a lot of mistakes and a lot of faults, so you cannot really copy that. So it's something else, it's something holistic, so I think they are not there yet.
Emma, should you maybe kick, unless you have a question, but maybe sort of kick things off in terms of, you've arrived in Zurich, maybe you're thinking about a glass, a bottle of wine. what advice would you like from Chandra?
Chandra, I think I'm actually pre-arrival in Zurich that I need help from. Chandra, as has been widely documented today, I got stuck in Heathrow for a long time yesterday. The 100 milliliter limit has not yet been lifted when it comes to security. So could you give me something that I can take through security without drawing too much attention to myself, that I can discreetly enjoy while waiting for my aircraft, which will allow me to actually get on the plane comparatively coherent and upright? The last bit's a bonus. Good. But yes, give me a little stiffener to get me through an airport delay, please.
Good. Okay, Emily, do you need a little stiffener?
So like everyone in Zurich yesterday, I took out the garden furniture, made the rooftop look nice. And the idea is today to inaugurate the barbecue season. I know there'll be some salad, some greens, but also some chicken on the grill. So anything to kind of celebrate the inauguration of the rooftop barbecue season.
Okay, Andrew. I know you're going to be heading this way anyway, but there might be time this afternoon. As I said, it could be wine for weeks away. Who knows? You might even you might even see Chandra when you're here. But in the absence of all of that, what are you looking for?
Well, first of all, I haven't quite got over Chandra's robot that puts beetles off having sex. That's the first thing. I think we need to see that machine. I think there's a few hotels that could do with them. They've got very thin walls to put off a ambitious at nighttime guest. But anyway, let's go local. Let's go totally local. We have lots of the patrons, the key supporters of Monocle, coming into Zurich for this dinner tomorrow. What would be your recommendation, Chandra, for a bottle of wine that people could pick up in Zurich that would give them not just a flavour of Team Monocle, but a flavour of Zurich and a flavour of what the city stands for?
Okay, I've got Emma is standing by over here. She's lined up a couple of guests. She's going to introduce them for us as well. Emma, who did you find in the audience for us?
Oh, they were clamoring to get on the radio, Tyler. They really were. I've had to fight them off. Paul from New York City and Daisy from Manchester in the United Kingdom. A very warm welcome to the table around Dufourstrasse 90.
Thank you.
When did you... Right, so you know the rules of this game, we are assuming. Paul, what would you like to ask Chandra?
So my husband and I are going to be in Paris for the Olympics for a few days, but we're planning to go to the Champagne region. So how would one spend 36 hours in the Champagne region, and what should we bring back to New York?
Gloriously, that's what Chandra is thinking as well. At least 36 hours there. Let's head to Manchester for your requests.
Well, it's got to be weather related, I suppose. Manchester, even in the summer, pours with rain. So what's a good garden party tipple that kind of works warm, cold,
hot.
Okay, Chandra, you've got your thank you. Thanks very much for that, Chandra. You've got your work cut out for you for the next 25 minutes. We'll come back on this. She's busy now. Andrew, I just want to go back to you. You were talking about I don't want to sort of bring it back to the Daily Mail or to the topic of sex, but there is a story which is most promiscuous countries in the world revealed. Emma's sort of shuddering. Now, I don't know. Should we do a little quick quiz? No one looking. Okay, I'm starting with you, Emily. Most promiscuous countries, countries where people have had the most partners across a lifetime.
Sweden, for no particular reason.
Sweden, for no particular reason. Not bad. In the top 10. We'll come back to that. Yeah. Where do you think Finland is in the top 10?
Probably not. We're just a little bit behind Sweden, I would say.
Okay, Emma.
Oh, the Netherlands.
Netherlands. Okay.
For no particular reason.
For no particular reason. Okay, Chandra.
Germany.
Okay. Andrew.
Well,
and we can't see where your hands are, Andrew.
Unfortunately, I've seen this list, and I know that, for one, that you're oddly sitting in a hotbed of lustiness, actually, in the nation you're in.
Yeah, we are in a hotbed of lustiness, but everyone don't get too excited, because we're bottom of the league table, at least when it comes to top 10. Anyway, should I read it from bottom up or top down? What do you prefer?
For bottoms or tops, it's up to you.
Okay, we will start. Andrew, okay, do you have the list in front of you?
Yeah, I've got the list here. Okay. are we starting? Let's start from the bottom.
You said it, Andrew. So people sort of just managed to sort of, they just broke into this country. We're at number 10 in Switzerland, correct?
Yeah, number 10 in Switzerland. Edging in at number 9 is Sweden. See, those dark nights are good for you.
Yeah, then we go to our other neighbors near us here in Switzerland. Italy, number 8. Then Norway. Okay. Yeah, sorry, Andrew, go ahead.
Oh, yeah, and just jumping in at 6, Finland, you see, up there when it's dark at night.
Finns. So, yeah.
So, and most importantly, we beat the other Nordics. So that's,
you beat the other Nordics as well. Well, not quite, actually, because then we go to South Africa. And then, Andrew, where do we go in the Nordic world?
Oh, yes, that outlier right up there, Iceland. I'm surprised that Greenland didn't edge in just above Iceland, but it's obviously even darker in Iceland.
Then actually we go to two more island nations, New Zealand and then Australia. And then, Andrew, this one is a surprise, though, number one. Any sort of, from the audience, any guesses? Hopefully no one's looked this up.
France,
what else? Do we have any others?
Argentina,
Brazil, Colombia. Andrew, break the news.
Turkey.
Right? Turkey. Anyway, this Daily Mail article, this is your afternoon sorted out. You can go and read it. And it sorts it all out. Where do you think the U.S. is in all of this? This is an interesting one, actually. Emily, sort of, are they top?
14.
They're 14. They're not. 14 would be Thailand. It's the U.S. United States is actually number 21, which is, so they're actually not even in the top 20.
Yeah. I'm just curious about the scientific method behind this ranking.
Well, no, I think it's sort of a rather upstanding organization that was responsible for this. Andrew, you were going to say, sorry.
Oh, we should just point out that the in that range from 10 to number 1. So number 10, the average Swiss person has 11.1. I don't know who the 0.1 is, sexual partners. And the Turks go for a full 14.5. I can see what a half measure might be, but a 0.1, I'm not sure.
Yeah. So anyway, that's just a little bit of a round of all things happening. Andrew, have a lovely Sunday. We look forward to seeing you at some point tomorrow.
Okay, Tyler, have a great Sunday.
Thank you. Coming up a little bit later in the program, we are going to be talking to the designer, the neighbor as well, Alfredo Heberle. He is here. Emma, you were sort of already looking at the fine tome right beside you right here. Lovely, lovely title. So we're going to be talking to Alfredo a little bit later in the program as well. Also, as we said, We'll be heading to Finland, Emily, to talk to the very lovely Petri Bursov as well, see what's happening on that side of the Baltic. He might have some thoughts also on the rankings as well. But Emma Nels is right beside me with the news headlines.
Thank you very much indeed. Tyler, a pro-Russian populist, has been elected the next president of Slovakia. Peter Pellegrini is a former prime minister and an ally of the new prime minister, Robert Fico. Mr. Fico has called for an end to Western military support for Ukraine and an end to what he says is demonising Russian President Vladimir Putin. Tens of thousands of Israelis have marched against the Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu. The rallies coincide with this weekend's six-month anniversary of the start of the Israel-Hamas war. The US Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen has advised the Chinese Premier that the ability to have difficult conversations has put the two superpowers on a more stable footing. It's happened in the last year. And residents on a tiny Italian island have been offered the chance to each adopt a wild goat after numbers grew to six times the human population. It's estimated that between 600 to 800 goats now live on the island of Alcudi. The goats have outgrown their usual habitat on the slopes of the dormant volcano and are now causing havoc in gardens and allotments, knocking down walls and even taking up residence in the local bar. Residents, although glad of a proposed solution, are sceptical, with one person suggesting that the only way to get the animals out of the steeply sloped village will have to be by helicopter. And those are the headlines. Back to you, Tyler.
Thanks, Emma. That seems like a very almost Swiss story as well, because I always feel like in this country, any excuse to use a helicopter, even to remove animals off of mountains, they're all for it here.
There's always that lovely image of the legs dangling.
Well, yeah, I think we've got that print. Might be on the wall here. It's somewhere around, which is you see a cow suspended from a Rega chopper, but all you just see is this floating cow.
Indeed. So serene as well. I mean, obviously unable to move and probably absolutely terrified.
Exactly. This could be us after sort of an afternoon at various vineyards down the lake. Chandra, while Chandra is just also very busy doing her research, etc. So it is a bit of a, I know Eric, I'm going to take Emma down to Eric Meyer a little bit later, Chandra, to the Eric Meyer vineyard. And I'm just sort of wondering we've got a number of people in town here. Your sort of take on just wine production along the lake here in the Zurich region. If you could just sort of maybe have sort of three tips for our visitors who are here today, where would you sort of send them?
Well, my first tip was Erich Meyer. So you do it already. So I think the nice thing is that a lot of vineyards are anyway grown around lakes. So Zurich has a lake. So you find a lot of vineyards. You have both sides. And even close to Zurich, there is Schwarzenbach. It's a nice winery. I try to find local grapes like Reuschling or Kerner, Riesling Silvaner, which is in Germany called Müller-Thurgau. So it's a very aromatic white. So it's really wines for the season now.
Okay. So if people want two tips, Erich Meyer today. And of course, the Schwarzenbach is open as well. Very good. Emma, just on that.
Yes.
What's going to accompany any sort of lunch wishes today in Zurich?
Absolutely anything that will go with a delicious glass of wine. The interesting thing is that as a way of an aside, I'm traveling on from Zurich to meet my family in the next couple of days. My husband and my son have given me a lot of clothes to put in my check-in luggage.
Wait, you're traveling further. They're traveling direct, almost non-stop.
They're traveling non-stop.
But you're the donkey.
I'm the donkey. But they have given me all the clothes. Now, having just found out that I'm going to be going to a vineyard in the next couple of hours...
You have to jettison some of the gear.
They're not having any clothes.
No, exactly.
No, they're going to have to sort themselves out. The trousers and the trainers are going. Apologies to my family, but you better sort yourselves out.
We're also going up to Helsinki right now. Our Petri Bursov is standing by up there. Good morning, Heva Huomenta. Petri, nice to have you on the line.
Hyvää huomenta, Tyler. Greetings from rather wintry Helsinki still. We had a massive snowstorm, almost a blizzard over the weekend. And yeah, a little bit jealous. I heard what the weather is like in Zurich. So yeah, trying to survive.
Okay, so tell us what's making news on your side of the Baltic today.
Well, lots of news to go through, but I want to start with this piece of news that I read on the Finnish public broadcaster YLE's website. So schools in the city of Helsinki's education division are missing a total of 18,000 digital devices. They basically did an inventory and they realized that they're missing like 18,000 computers. And they've been tracking them down for a while and they managed to locate almost 14,000. They didn't really say where they found them, but my suspicion is that maybe some of the students friends took the liberty of taking some of the devices home with them. But then I'm also like reading this news and I'm thinking like, how sloppy can you really be to lose 18,000 devices in a, you know, relatively small city like Helsinki? So, you know, maybe we should go back to pen and paper.
Yeah, I don't know, Emily, do you have any thoughts on this? It's sort of like, also, at what point does the alarm go off? Like, oh, 1,000 are missing, 10,000 are missing, sort of, you know, then we sort of launch an investigation?
Well, my sister is a teacher in Helsinki, so I should maybe check her cupboard and see if the computers are there. No, but on a serious note, just as Petri said, I mean, I think maybe we should go back to basics, pen and paper, do basic calculations, learn to read and write well before we kind of, in a way, force kids to start doing everything on computers.
Okay, Emma, you might have to say... have a line on that as a parent,
yes,
around the table.
And as someone who lost her phone for half an hour this morning to find it in her handbag, I completely understand why 18,000 items can disappear. I think my family's lost a good 2,000 of them in the last 6 months.
Petri, what else do you have for us?
Well, let's talk about the damaged gas pipeline between Estonia and Finland. As we all remember, it was damaged by a Chinese vessel last October, one of the key pipelines in the Baltic Sea. And now, basically, they managed to repair it so that it will be operational on the 22nd of April. Now, the interesting thing here is that Finland and Estonia have been just incredibly silent about it all. You know, the investigations pretty much 100% confirmed that it was a Chinese vessel en route from Kaliningrad in Russia to St. Petersburg, and that it also that it had damaged the pipeline on purpose. Now, of course, we took it up. Finland and Estonia took it up with China, and China said that, you know, they had nothing to do with it. They will assist in the investigation, which is, by the way, still ongoing. But I mean, we haven't heard anything about this. And, you know, we're talking about key energy infrastructure between two NATO members and just complete silence. I just find this extremely interesting.
And just when we're talking about security policy, maybe we sort of jump to your neighbor, or at least where you certainly join up in the far north, Norway, and obviously their massive defense spending boost plans.
Yes, that's correct. A very considerable spending hike in defense. So Norway says that it will invest in defense $56 billion in the next 12 years, bringing it its total defense spending somewhere over $150 billion in dollar terms. So this is very significant. It's basically an unprecedented hike, almost doubling their defense spending in the high north, you know, buying new submarines, new vessels for their navy, introducing three new military bases in the high north. And also, they want to increase the number of people who perform military service in Norway by 50%. They didn't give a deadline for this, but yeah, it's of course, and the Prime Minister Støre saying that this has everything to do with Russia, that Norway has to be ready for a possible future confrontation. And of course, interesting also in the context that now all the Nordic countries up in the north, Sweden, Norway, and Finland are NATO members, so it changes the whole defense landscape there as well.
I just want to bring Emily in on this. Of course, someone who's in the world of mediation and trying to potentially find a path to peace, not always. What happens? Because we look at sort of Norway, of course, it is one of the star players when it comes to global mediation roles. Doesn't always win a seat to host various sides. But when you see this sort of level of arms building, or certainly sort of defense procurement going on, does it change the position of a nation in terms of being, let's say, a level player? Even, of course, they've been a NATO member for a very long time. But at the same time, that's also the intersection of also being a key diplomatic player as well.
Absolutely. And Norway is an interesting case also now compared to Finland that's joined NATO, having been a NATO member for decades by now. I mean, in mediation, it comes down to the parties to accept a mediator who should be impartial. certain alliances might exclude you from being being able to perform that function in a particular config setting, but enable you to do it in other settings. And Norway actually has benefited from its NATO membership also in the field of mediation, kind of because of its close ties to the US and otherwise. But I mean, my key message would be it absolutely makes sense to increase defense budgets. There is this 2% NATO rule that European countries are increasingly meeting as a target, not least thanks to also the potential next president of the United States having said that NATO protection only applies to those countries that meet that target. But at the same time, we should invest on the kind of softer side of security equally ferociously as we are doing on the hard security side at the moment.
Patrick, just before we leave you, you teased us with a story about when we're going to stay in Norway for this one as well, which is about a bunch of students. And is it a graduation bus that went wrong? Because this is always the season of, certainly in Scandinavia, of students graduating, garlands in their hair, crazy caps, riding on flatbeds and buses. But is that related to that?
It is related, but the funny thing is, this is before the graduation. So this is in all the Nordics. High school students basically, before they take their final exams, they organize these massive parties, and then they take their final exams, and then they graduate. So in Norway, basically, this celebration takes the form of the so-called Rusbussana. So they're basically buses that they kit out with speakers, and they paint them, and they host parties in them, and I think copious amounts of alcohol are also consumed. And this is one of their, you know, key student traditions that is age old. People have, it's like different colored overalls, actually in Finland and Sweden as well. But now what happened this year is that some of the students went a little bit overboard with the decorations of their buses, and they received complaints from women's rights groups for overtly sexual paintings on these buses. So now first, there was a party bus in the town of Pöbben. The bus was called Pöbben in the town of Brune, and it was reported to the police a couple of weeks ago. The police investigated it, said that, you know, there's no grounds to open a case here. Yes, there were some pornographic images, but, you know, they're students being students. And now this week, same women's rights group again reported a bus, now this time in the town of Arendal, that reported a rather well-equipped donkey performing some rather nasty acts on the side of the bus. But I read this, and I love how this is like a massive news story in Norway. Even the prime minister weighing in on this topic, that with everything going on in the world, you know, this is what makes the news.
Busy news week in the Nordics. Our Petri Rosoff in Helsinki, have a very good week. It's just gone at 10:42 here in London. Emma was shaking her head there. As Chanda was just like looking, just rather dismayed by it all.
We sprang Chanda from her real concentration on the wine quiz. I've never seen such sort of attention to detail and folded pieces of yellow paper. It's heavenly. Those pictures are really nasty.
You did see them?
Yeah, really okay. Not nice at all. The only thing is that although the police have said that they're not pressing charges, apparently one of the artist's mothers has asked them to take it off because she doesn't approve.
Of course. Not that you were sort of, you know, of course, painting well-equipped donkeys on the side of buses, Emily, but can you recall what you did for your graduation? What was the thematic? So did you grow up in Helsinki?
Yes, but then I finished high school abroad. So kind of for better or worse, I missed out on a lot of these very highly intellectual traditions that high school kids have in the Nordic countries. But I'm, of course, the youngest of four kids. So I did grow up observing my sister and my two brothers doing that. But luckily, I would say they're not on the artistic side of things. So they were just joining the buses rather than painting things.
Very good. I'm very happy to say that one of our neighbors from just down the street has joined. He's actually, many of our listeners this morning, and this is a bit of a sort of a Finnish theme as well, might be enjoying their breakfast as well. They could be enjoying their boiled eggs maybe in one of the cups, or they could be even sort of consuming their muesli out of something that that Alfredo Heberle designed many, many years ago for Itala in Finland. Of course, world-renowned designer, getting all ready because he'll be in Milan in a few days. But we caught him this morning because he's brought this amazing volume comes in two parts, but it's verbal doodling, and then, of course, with sort of a backing act as well. 30 years, questions, answers. It's just almost just out from the Zurich-based publisher Scheidegger and Spiess. Good morning. Wonderful to have you here. Nice
good
to
morning.
See you. We'll talk about Salone in a moment because we're a week away from things kicking off, and I want to hear about the projects that are coming up there. But first, a designer, you know, and it, what's amazing is these books come out and you think it's going to be this retrospective of just, yeah, also doodling of all of the great things you've done, but it's not. There's just two volumes of words. Why?
First, we had this period, the pandemic, 2 years ago, a little bit more, 4 years ago already. So we, and then I when I started being a student as an industrial designer in Zurich, I discovered this fantastic fair in Milano. That was 86, where I went the first time as a first-year student. And from then on, I went every year to this fantastic fair. I discovered all these fantastic maestros, people, designer, entrepreneur, and I started to work many, many years later for these companies. And then this pandemic came, and I just didn't know what to do during the week of the Salone del Mobile. So I just started to really doodling and verbal doodling the stories I lived in this fantastic Milano. And that's all about. I didn't want to use any images. It's more verbal images. And I don't talk about me. I just talk about these encounters, these fairs. When I met the first time Jasper Morrison, the first time Konstantin Gijic, that we became friends, etc., etc. And that's it's really, really long time ago. And,
but here's the amazing thing, and Emma, I want to bring you in on this. Of course, someone who is chronicling what's going on in the world, because I'm keen, and I'll come back to Alfredo in a moment. But Emma, he goes through. So we meet Ricardo Blumer, and this is just, you know, it's doodling, Ricardo Blumer, and the deceptive lightness of inquiry. And then we get to Renato Stauffacher, and it's on little tiny sparks of joy. So, I mean, how do you think this man sort of is able to recall all of these things going back to sort of the late 80s? This is kind of, so, you know, I sort of wonder, was he recording all of it? But it's remarkable when you look through this. The journalist, you know, word acrobats and linguistic architects.
That's amazing. The thing that reminded me when I looked at that was the, I can't remember, I think it might have been Maya Angelou who says that when you meet somebody, you don't necessarily remember what they said and what they did, but you remember how they made you feel. And that's very much the impression that I get from your book, that you get these little moments, these little sparks, which obviously were an emotional reaction to the people you were meeting. Is that correct?
As many of you know, I grew up in Argentina, so I came to Switzerland and I discovered this country. But then I was missing the South American part. That's what I was screaming, Argentina number one. But we missed it. So I discovered, then in Italy, I discovered the Latin part that I was missing from. And that's why maybe I remember this so clearly, because first I really do have a visual memory, but then it's like this emotional moment that, like, I thought that Konstantin Gierczyk from Bavaria, written in Italian, so I thought, from Monaco, not that you write in Monaco in Italian, that, and he's from Munich, so I thought, oh, he's clever, he already is saving taxes by being a very young designer. So all these stories I do remember exactly, and
But Alfredo, you recall these stories in such detail in
yes,
the book.
Yes.
And some of course are these wonderful scenarios. So you have, okay, so anyone who goes to Salone, of course, will know Barbasso and the Negroni Sbagliato, you know, the designer's cocktail. Yeah. So that's easy because, you know, that's many, many fueled evenings and you can recall many stories. But then you have the fine detail, your conversation with Enzo Mari, for example. So did you have to go back to all of these people when and where possible, of course, to speak to some of them, to conjure up what happened? Or this is just purely the memory of that moment on their stand, the espresso in the morning? Because it's not like this is like one or two paragraphs. These carry on over pages.
Yes, I have to say that it just came out like fluently. So I just started writing it, and I afterwards I started to order it, and then I went back to the clear years or magazines, whatever, because I put a lot of information as well. But it just went fluently like that. But I remember every single moment. It's just a movie for me still today. And but I don't remember when we met first. Do you remember? Maybe it was at Barbasso, then we forgot.
It could have been Barbasso, but I think it was definitely Milan for sure. And of course, it's been many, many times here, but that's something else. And I always sort of bump into you on the odd train here and there. You're going to have a moment with this book, of course, at the Swiss Pavilion in Milano next week. We're also looking at doing a little book signing here. I can say to our patrons, I'm not sure how many copies we have in the house. We have a few. So if anyone wants to purchase one later, Alfredo's here to sign copies which is great. But let's jump to Milan next week. I mean, already the city is going to be in full flow a week from today. It seems to start one or two days earlier every year. Yeah, what do you have premiering? Things that you can talk about at least for Milano next week.
Sure. Behind the book signing at the House of Switzerland, I will have with a small Finnish company, Nikkari, a small project. I will have with the old company, Alias, that I work since nearly 30 years, also a new chair. And I will have with the Spanish company in the showroom, Andre World, a sofa and office system.
And it's amazing when you look at sort of the energy that goes into Milan. But, you and I were also talking about what's incredible about the process which you're involved with, that, the depth of these relationships with some of these manufacturers, of course, is not like, they just sort of think, on a whim, we need a little bit of Alfredo. But development of a chair, a sofa, whatever it may be, it is not something which happens à la minute. This is something where we're talking about years of development for things to go into the product cycle as well. So I'm wondering, what is the range that we're talking about for some of these things that are releasing?
This chair that I designed for Alias, I started 2017 by sketching it, by thinking about it. It's like a good wine. Good wines needs time, good design needs time. And if you don't have that, then it's just something trendy, something just go out immediately. Or the glasses I designed for Italia more than 20 years ago, Essence, which is, by the way, you have some as well.
So
I know that's why I say it, because I think nearly every Finns and other people have it because it's a bestseller since 20 years. And the reason maybe it's because I did it so big, so everybody just pour a little bit of wine, but it's already half a liter. So it was very good for the industry.
Alfredo, you're going to be sticking around when we come off air as well. So I just want to say a huge thanks. Congratulations on the book. And we're also going to be planning a broader assignment when we do our little aperitivo here in the coming weeks as well. But fantastic to have you. Speaking of wine, we have to go. We're going to jump to Chandra right now. We should maybe... Emma, should we start with, because I think we've lost Andrew, but Andrew sort of gave a brief for tomorrow night. So Chandra, we have our patrons dinner down in Küsnacht tomorrow evening. He was saying, what would be that welcome wine? You touched on Erich Meyer as well. But when you sort of, and maybe it's not just this event, when you want to welcome people to Switzerland, unless you have this whole country to choose from in terms of wine production, what is Chandra's starting point wine?
Well, actually, it's a wine that Tyler, you and me are doing right now. We have to go to Schossler, which is our main grape, a white wine grape that other countries produce, but they eat it and we produce wine out of it. It's a neutral grape, like Switzerland. So I think everybody should have a glass of Schossler or no filtre. It's another name for a specific Schossler from Neuchâtel. I think this would be a nice welcome.
And just tell us, because the Schossler is, it really sort of preoccupies, and you said it's a defining grape, it's a neutral grape for a neutral country. But what is it about the quality? So if someone is listening in Australia, you have to say, let's get us close to something like a Schossler, because to me it is so unique. And does it have a close cousin anywhere else that you can think of?
Well, I mean, in Japan you can say Koshu tastes a little bit similar, the Trebbiano in North Italy tastes similar. So it's a non-aromatic grape that if you think about a Riesling, it's very aromatic, it's colorful, it's roses, flowers. Schossler is like understatement. It's like, if you want to say Coco Chanel, you don't do too much and it's always good. But we always have to think that the food that is also loved in Switzerland, you have a lot of cheese, you have a lot of fish from the lakes, and Schoslau goes well with it. So it's our really main nutrition grape.
Oh, you like it? Emma loves the sound that it's also nutritious and good for you as well.
Oh, it's a health food. Chandra, the way that you make wine sound like a sort of the elixir of life for all the right reasons is really something rather reassuring. Every time I wonder whether I should have a glass, I think, what does Chandra think here?
She thinks yes.
Yes, right? She does. Yes. Yeah.
Emma, so just what was your brief to Chandra?
Mine was, having not made it to Zurich but stuck in the departure lounge at Heathrow Airport, I needed that long wait sustainer that would allow me to cope with it yet appear pretty in one piece when I got on a plane. Now, I know you've told me before that you actually really do have something that helps you deal with planes, don't you?
Well, it's known. I fly a lot, but I'm always a little bit scared. So I have my little whiskey bottles, 10 centiliter, and I have them like a medication. And so it depends if it's shaking. I drink a little bit, but this is, I do it, you know, for 40 years, I don't know.
You see, it's that health thing again. She
it
has
is,
a bottle
absolutely.
Of whiskey.
Something is a pacifier.
So I need this with me. And but what you have in Heathrow, but also in Zurich, you have to cover your house in the airport. And I think Caviar House is always a secret address because they do their own fillings. They do even small bottles. You can have a half bottle of champagne or just 2 deciliter. You get this bottle. Sometimes they make you a sandwich and you are the queen of the airport.
I want to be the queen of the airport, staggering around with my small bottle of champagne. I'm not quite sure elegant picture you're painting of me at the moment, but thank you very much for that, Chandra.
Emily, what were you after on this? Hopefully, this fine weather. It hasn't gotten much brighter outside the studio, but anyway, the sun is coming. So says Meteo Schweiz. But anyway,
and it's supposed to be rather warm today and even warmer tomorrow. But we've come out of hibernation here in Zurich, and it's time to inaugurate the rooftop barbecue season. So what would you recommend?
Because when you grill, you know, you have chicken, you have vegetable, you have meat, you have, I don't know, maybe all kind of food. So you need something that goes with everything. And you need also something funky that is easy. You don't want to be busy with the vintage or the right gloss or whatever. So the safest is a pet nut. Take a pink pet nut because it's nice color to see colors. And I just found one from Spain.
But you're looking puzzled. Which is pet nut?
Pet nut is like a, it's like not a champagne really, but it's the fermentation was stopped in the bottle, and it bubbles slightly, has low alcohol. You drink it chilled on ice or very, you know, unverkrampft, easy. And there's one that has a wonderful name. It's called Everything But the Kitchen Sink. I think it can fit your rooftop discussions.
Wonderful. Excellent. Very good. So we had a request now. Emma, you can sort of channel the northern side of the yes. UK for us. We had a request from Manchester as well, which had to do, of course, with changing weather and what might be... The correct tipple, I think, was
this
the term.
This is from Daisy, wasn't it, Daisy? Thank you for bringing a bit of Manchester to Switzerland. We know it's damp, and you've lived in Manchester, haven't
I have
you?
Indeed,
you know,
as well.
You know. So rainy wine, please, Chandra.
Well, let's bring Switzerland to Manchester. And, you know, today it's nice in Zurich, but actually the most sunshine you have in the Ticino, which is the southern part of Switzerland, border to Italy. And they are famous for Merlot, the Merlot grape. Most of the vineyards are Merlot grape. So I suggest you bring a little gift from Switzerland back to Manchester. And there's the Cantina Monti or Kopf von der Krone, but find a nice Merlot from Ticino to bring home.
Okay, and last but not least, a request. Of course, it was Emma was 36 hours in Champagne, wasn't it?
Yes, it was. Which I think is a question that many of us would like the answer to.
Yeah, so I you know, it's you can do so many things in the Champagne, and it's difficult to pin it down to something. But what I usually do, I go to the best wine shop, and in Reims, where the big cathedral is, there is La Cave du Forum, and there you find all kinds of champagnes you only get there. And they will tell you where to go and what to do. So I will go La Cave du Forum in Reims.
Okay, excellent. Chandra Kurt, always fantastic having you on the program. Also, Alfredo Heberle as well, wonderfully having you. Andrew Tuck, of course, in London. Our very own Emily Isahau as well. Petri Rostov, of course, up in Helsinki. That's all the time we have for today, Emma.
Thank you very much indeed, Tyler. It's been wonderful and lovely to see all the patrons in the room.
Indeed. Also, big thanks to Mariella Bevan as well, back in London. Vadi Sook, of course, looking after the audio for us here in Zurich. And also our researchers, Christian Grady, also helping us back in London, and George Ruskin. I'm Tyler Roulet. A huge thanks also to our patrons for joining us. We're back same time next week. Goodbye.